Sermons from the Journey is the audio podcast of the weekly message preached by Reverend Becca Gorell, pastor at Lebanon United Methodist Church in Lebanon, New Hampshire, and blogging at pastorbecca.com. Thanks for listening. I tried to keep goldfish for a long time. They're a trickier pet than you realize, and I use pet kind of loosely, so they're not very snuggly. But they're very fragile creatures, actually. I mean, their bodies need to be in water that's good for them and that has a good pH balance and that isn't too dirty, but by just sort of living and existing, they make the water pretty dirty and they increase the acidity of the water, which is decreasing the pH or something like that. I was like a little chemist with these goldfish and their fish tank, always checking the pH level to see if it was the right level, and it never was. It was always too acidic because fish waste and algae and the natural life cycle of the plant matter in the tank would create excess bad pH in the fish tank. My knowledge of exactly what was happening breaks down after a while, but I knew that I needed to get the color on the pH reader to match the color on the card, and it was the wrong color. And so I was constantly trying to maintain this fish tank to make it right. And invariably what would happen is it would get so dirty and so acidic that I would think, this is not good. Everything, every piece of literature says that this water should be toxic to these fish, and yet they're swimming around in it like they don't care. It is poison. It is literally poison to their bodies. I've got to do something. So I'd clean the fish tank, just like I was supposed to do, and I'd siphon all the stuff, and I'd change out a portion of the water, not all the water. Had some bad experiences changing all the water. That's very, very bad. But a fair amount of the water, because if you change just a little water, it doesn't look any clearer. It doesn't seem to get any clearer. And I'd put the drops in that change the pH, that lower the acidity. And if it didn't seem much healthier, pH would still be pretty bad and the tank would still be pretty green or brown or mucky or whatever. I'd do it again and do it again, and I'd get that pH level right to where it's supposed to be healthy for goldfish, and they would all die. It was good, healthy, necessary change. They were swimming in poison. They needed this change. Where they were was not healthy or sustainable for their physical lives. And yet, when I tried to make it healthier, too much, too fast, and they could not swim in that good, clear water. The people of Israel have been living in the land of Egypt under the oppression of Pharaoh. They have gotten to the point where the Egyptian people are so afraid of the people of Israel and that they will rise up, that they are killing the children, not letting babies survive, right? Remember how Moses had to be hidden and raised by someone else. It's bad in Egypt. It's toxic. And so God sends Moses to Pharaoh to say, let my people go. And it's hard enough to get Pharaoh to let go of the people because he was benefiting from this toxic situation. But eventually Pharaoh does let the people go. And the people journey out into the wilderness and they do okay for about 2 months, month and a half. Let's not push it. And then they begin to complain. And they begin to wish that they were back in Egypt. Yes, it was toxic, but we knew those waters. Yes, it was a problem. It was poisonous to us, but we knew where the danger was. Here in the wilderness, it's different. It's too much. And yes, this is freedom, but we don't know what to do with it. And there's a part of us that wishes we were back in Egypt. At least there, if we died under the oppression of Pharaoh, we knew what the score was. Here, we just don't know. And so the people struggle, even in this good change, this life-giving change. Too much, too soon, too fast. It's unsettling. It's hard to let go of the past, even when the past isn't always good or healthy. There are many passages I love in the Gospels. The one I just shared is one of my particular favorites, and particularly from the Gospel of John, which is a very complex gospel, and I have a very complex relationship with it. There's a lot of humanity in the Gospel of John, but the humanity is reserved for the disciples, not for Jesus. Jesus is very divine most of the time. But the disciples are very human, especially Peter. Very little love lost between Peter and the author of the fourth gospel, it seems. Peter comes across as kind of foolish and very, very human. And I love this story because it's something that I would do. It's something that I would relate to. In fact, it's something that I have encouraged people to do. When some huge change happens in your life, when everything has been turned upside down, you've experienced a loss, you've experienced a life-altering event, and everything seems chaotic, we often tell people, go back to what's familiar. Go back to your usual routine. Do the things you would always do. Occupy your body with something that is soothing to you, some hobby or physical labor that you know how to do. Chop wood, wash dishes, whatever it is that is soothing to you and that occupies your body so your brain and your spirit have time to process, right? There's been huge upheaval in Peter's life. And it's not just the past couple of weeks when his best friend was killed and then not dead. But before that, his whole life has been changed. He's been pulled away from what he knows. He's gone on this incredible journey that nothing has been the same since Jesus called him. And his life now is clearer. The water is fresher and much more sustainable for the life-giving activity into which God has called him. But it's been a little too much. And there's been a little too much hecticness in his life. And Peter throws his hands up in the air and says, "That's it. I'm going fishing." And six other disciples say, "Wait, take us with you. We're coming too." And they all go back out in the boat. Now, do they go fishing because that's what they were doing before Jesus? Before their lives got turned upside down? That's the last time things made sense? Do they go fishing because that's where Jesus found them the first time and they're really hoping he'll find them again? They want to see him again, but they want to see that Jesus that they used to know, not this new scarier Jesus who can walk through walls and come back through the dead and all that stuff, but the Jesus that they used to know. Wasn't it easier when we first knew Jesus? When it seemed like following Jesus was just about making a couple changes in our lives, but nothing too risky, nothing too far outside our comfort zone, nothing that might get us in trouble with the Roman authorities. They want to go back to that Jesus, or even to the time before Jesus. Even though the water they're swimming in is water in which death itself has been conquered. That's way better than the pH being like at a good healthy level. Death itself has been conquered. But it's too much. It's too different. It's too strange. I'm going fishing. Please wait, I'm coming with you. They want to go back to where the way it was, even if it's not as good, even if in some ways it was unhealthy or toxic. Take me back to what I know. And that's true in our lives. I love this passage because it's so human. It's so true to who we are. And the number of times I've said, I'm going fishing, although I don't fish, but I'm doing that thing, which brings me back to what I know and what feels comfortable and familiar and healthy to me, whether or not it's healthy. That's true for us individually. It's true for us as a church. As we talk about living into our identity and who God calls us to be, there are parts of us that we have to let go of and leave behind to do that. And that is hard. It's challenging. It's scary. It's dangerous. There's a longing for what has been, even if what has been wasn't always the best. When we take on new habits in our lives and we let go of things that have been unhealthy for us, there's always temptation to turn around and go back to them, even when we know that's not healthy. When we get out of relationships that have been unhealthy, so that we can live in freer, cleaner water and stop swimming in the toxicity of what has been. there's still loss. That's still a lot of change. Too much, too soon sometimes, and it is really hard to let go of what is behind us. But the disciples find that it's not the same. They go out in the lake, they're out in their boat, and they catch no fish all night. Because they can't go back. They've been changed. They've been to the mountaintop with Jesus. They literally, those guys, have been on the Mount of Transfiguration with Jesus and have seen him transformed before their eyes. And they have been on the Mount of Olives with Jesus. And they have heard him say that he is laying down his life for them. Not many of them were on the hill of Calvary with Jesus. They ran away for that part. But when they try to go back to what was before, even to the Jesus they knew before, they find they can't do it. It's not quite the same. But they also find that that's exactly where Jesus finds them, because he knows they'll be there. And when he calls to them, he doesn't say, "Now, how many times do we have to go over this?" He says that other times in the Gospels. But this time he doesn't. It's almost a little bit teasing, because he knows the answer, but it's loving too. "Children, you don't have any fish, do you? Remember I told you you were not going to be fishermen anymore? You were going to go out and fish for people? So here you are back fishing again. How's that working out for you?" Children, though, with love. And he invites them. He doesn't tell them, "You've got to go and go fish for people, and I'm sending you out into the world." And he says, "Come have breakfast." And that's enough. He has a short conversation with Peter, a short conversation with the beloved disciple, but that's enough. The gospel doesn't record him sending them anywhere else, doing anything else spectacular. Tells Peter to feed the sheep, that's it. That reminder is enough. "You don't have any fish." That wasn't what it was about, remember? "Come have breakfast." Jesus serves brunch, I love that. And that's enough to reconnect them and to say, okay, yes, things are different. We can't go back. We can't go back. We can only go forward. Letting go of those things that have tethered us and those places of transformation, no matter how hard they've been, is challenging. It can be freeing. Ask Elsa from Frozen. "Let it go" is a song of liberation and empowerment. But it can also be really poignant. As I was thinking this week, later this week, after the bulletin was printed, so you'll see that I've changed the closing hymn. Again, this happens when sermonizing takes process time. And what came to me suddenly was the song I always sing the first time that Jesus calls the disciples, that I always put in the bulletin then, "Lord, you have come to the lakeshore." I love that song. And it's a song that reminds us that God meets us where we are, in the midst of our familiar place, our work, our labor. "You find in my boat my nets and my labor." And the refrain, I always hear when we sing at that time, how God, smiling, calls us by name to come and follow. But this time, it was the next line in the refrain that caught my attention, that stuck in my awareness. The next line is, "Now my boat's left on the shoreline behind me. By your side, I will seek other seas." I usually hear, "By your side, I'll seek other seas." This time I heard, "By your side, I'll seek other seas." My boat is left on the shoreline behind me. I have a boat, I have a kayak. It's not my livelihood. It's not the place I always go to center myself. It's a thing I like to do, it's a hobby I like to do, and if I had to leave it behind on the shoreline, I'd still feel pretty sad about that. I can't imagine someone whose whole identity has been fishing for fish. That boat smells just like my fish tank smelled, dirty and stinky and of fish. But it's home and its livelihood, and it's what Peter knows and what James and John know, and they're going to leave it behind, not once but twice, because Jesus calls them. There's a poignancy in that. There's a hardness in that. It's not just the longing for what's safe and comfortable, but those pieces that we've carried with us and that have carried us. We've been talking about the butterfly, its transformation from caterpillar, that tangled, scary time of transformation inside the chrysalis, and how it has to push itself out to break free and therefore strengthen itself. But then it has to fly away and leave the empty shell of the chrysalis behind. These pictures that I found looking for the empty shell of a chrysalis, they are stunning in their otherworldly beauty. They're magnificent. They're almost perfectly transparent. And they are translucent, letting the light through. I mean, just really remarkable, beautiful shells of the transformation that the butterfly has undergone. And then the butterfly leaves them, just hanging out on the leaf, leaves behind that vessel that carried them into that new life. Transformation, change, no matter how long it takes, no matter how fast it is, no matter how healthy the outcome, will always mean leaving some things behind. That's true for us as a church. That's true for us as individuals. It was true for the disciples. It was true for the people of Israel fleeing Egypt. It will always be true. And that's part of the transformation that God works in our lives. It isn't easy. We don't get the promise ever that it's easy. I invite you to make yourself comfortable where you are sitting. Close your eyes if you want. Be in a comfortable posture and invite God to point out to you those things that it might be time to let go of. Those things, those vessels, those boats that have carried you, those shells of the chrysalis, the grave clothes left behind in Jesus' tomb. Or at the feet of Lazarus as the community unbound him and set him free. But now it might be time to lay them down, to leave the boat on the shoreline. And when God has brought to your awareness a thing or things or parts of self or parts of the world that it's time to gently lay down, I invite you to release them here in this sacred space. When the boat is left on the shoreline, we walk away, we go away, but God does not go away. God is everywhere. When we release those parts of ourselves, those parts of our journey to God, they are not lost. They are held in God's hands. This is a sacred space where we can lay at the altar, at the foot of the cross, the things that we want to let go of. Gently brushing off the shells, the exoskeleton of the chrysalis, tucking the net into the boat and letting it be. God, we pray, so that we may fly and soar into the places you call us, we pray that you give us the strength and the courage and the peace to lay down these things, to release them as you release us, so that we may be freed to let them go, to let them be. We give you thanks for the vessels that carry us and have carried us, for those times of transformation, hard as they have been. And we leave them at your feet, in your care, trusting your grace, so that by your side, taking up your hands, we may seek other seas. Amen.